The captain knew his ship could handle the wave if the bell faced into it, bow first, to cut down the area of impact. The captain ordered the helmsman to face the oncoming wave and keep it steady. Then he grabbed the mic and flipped a switch on the console that would connect the bridge with speakers all over the ship. "Attention all hands, this is the captain. A giant rogue wave is about to hit the ship. Get to a secure location away from flying objects and hold on. The impact will be severe. Repeat, the impact will be severe." As a precaution, he ordered the radio man to broadcast an SOS. The ship could always send out a recall if needed. The green, white-veined wave was about a half mile from the ship. "Look at that," Butler was saying. The sky was lit up by a series of brilliant flashes. "Lightning?"
"Maybe," the captain said. "I'm more concerned about that damn sea."
The wave's profile was unlike anything the captain had ever seen. Unlike most waves, which sloped down at an angle from the crest, this one was almost straight up and down, like a moving wall. The captain had a peculiar out-of-body sensation. Part of him watched the advancing wave in a disinterested scientific fashion, fascinated by the size and power, while another part stood in helpless wonder at the immense, menacing power. "It's still growing," Butler said with unabashed awe. The captain nodded. He was expecting the shock from the wave, but was unprepared when a trough big enough to swallow his ship opened up in the ocean in front of him. The captain looked into the abyss that had appeared before his eyes. "It's like the end of the world," he thought. The ship tilted into the trough, slid down the side, and buried its bow in the ocean. The captain fell against the forward bulkheads. Rather than strike head-on, the wave collapsed on top of the ship, burying it under thousands of tons of water. The pilot house windows imploded under the pressure, and the entire Atlantic Ocean seemed to pour into the bridge. The blast of water hit the captain and the others on the bridge with the force of 100 fire hoses. The bridge became a tangle of arms and legs. Books, pencils, and seat cushions were thrown about. Some of the water drained out through the windows, and the captain fought his way back to the controls. All the control screens were dead. The ship had lost its radar, gyro compasses, and radio communication. But most seriously, its power. All the instrumentation had become short-circuited. The steering gear was useless. The captain went to a window and surveyed the physical damage. The bow had been destroyed, and the ship was listing. He suspected that the hull plating may have been penetrated. The lifeboats on the foredeck had been swept from their davits. The ship wallowed like a drunken hippopotamus. "Captain," the first officer interrupted the captain's thoughts. Butler was staring through the broken window. His eyes were locked in an unbelieving stare on a distant point. The captain's gaze followed Butler's pointing finger, and he began to tremble as the thrill of fear went through him. Another horizontal line of foam was forming less than a quarter of a mile away. The first airplane arrived 2 hours later. It circled over the sea and was soon joined by other planes. Then the rescue ships began to arrive, diverted from the shipping routes. The ships lined up 3 miles apart and combed the sea like a search party looking for a lost child in the woods. After days of searching, they found nothing. The Southern Belle, one of the most advanced cargo ships ever designed and built, had simply vanished without a trace.